Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 84 of the Airman's Podcast. It's Tuesday, April 15th, 2008. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to my podcast. Today's episode is a bit special. It's part two of a conversation I had recently with Tim Carmel from There Are Some Who Call Me Tim and Go Rainbow Radio. Part one is actually over on Tim's site, There Are Some Who Call Me Tim, and I will put a link in the show notes. And this is part two. In part two, we turn a little bit more serious, but we still have plenty of opportunities for giggles, as you'd expect. So I'm going to play the rest of the conversation first, and then after that, I've got a few odds and ends, some comments and things like that. But right now, here's the conversation with the rest of the conversation with Tim.
Welcome to part two of the conversation with Tim Carmel. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Arthur?
Good. And I understand you've got heaps and heaps of downloads of part one of our episode.
Well, yeah, I just logged in and checked, and we had 3,000 downloads. Yeah, right.
I'm lying because it actually isn't posted yet, as we're recording.
It actually isn't posted yet. Which, well, let's say a little prayer to the podcasting gods that we'll get 3,000 downloads. Yeah, right. Like that's going to happen.
That would be cool,
of my podcast. That is.
Yeah, it's not very likely. I don't think somehow. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, in part one, of course, we talked about the Pope, and we talked about, what else did we talk about?
We talked about the Olympics.
Oh, yeah, talked about the Olympics. Well, the only other circus in town I can think of is the ongoing U.S. presidential election.
What a circus that is.
Yeah, the never-ending story.
What a circus that is. I know, to be honest with you, I'm getting so sick of it.
I am, too. I just can't wait for it to be over.
And it's going to be a long time before that happens, so...
Yeah, because, I mean, we're not even anywhere near getting ready for the conventions yet.
Yeah, and it's just the infighting between Obama and Clinton is just driving me bananas.
Yeah.
Bananas, so...
Yeah, and I was reading in... there was a poll the other day that was indicating that McCain would beat either Obama or Clinton. Although, of course, this far out, those kind of polls don't really matter because they don't mean anything this far out.
There's not enough water under the bridge.
Nope.
A lot of things can happen. Look at the whole Swift boat thing with John Kerry, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is that they haven't even gotten to that point yet, because once we have a nominee on the Democratic side, then comes the waging war from the Republican side and all the PAC groups and everybody pulling all the dirt out of the closet. So
absolutely. And the Republicans aren't going to want to start shooting their best ammunition now. They're going to want to wait until they have one target.
Right, exactly. And speaking of which, you know, one of the things that is really irritating me is, well, you know, I don't watch Fox News because that's just a waste of time. But, you know, all of the, even the rest of the media, it seems like every time I turn on the television, all I hear is the commentators beating up Hillary Clinton, but Obama, like, walks on water, like, no matter what. Anyone, you know, it's like Clinton said this and what an idiot she is and but let's just say the nicest, sweetest things about Barack Obama. It's like, you know, I mean, it's getting to the point of, you know, if Jesus Christ was running against Barack Obama, you know, they'd be tearing him up, you know, tearing up Jesus Christ, because, you know, I just don't get it. I really don't get it.
Well, I've heard that quite a lot, and I've read that a lot in blog comments and things along those lines. I think I'm a bit removed from it, being on the other side of the world. I only get the perspective, well, first of all, of stories that are played here. Usually they're often actually from the BBC. They're not from American media. Sometimes they are. And I can see the ABC World News Tonight or whatever it's called, and the CBS Evening News, not long after they play in the U.S. And so I miss out on a lot of that stuff that people complain about because... I'm not exposed to it, I guess, basically.
But yeah, well, MSNBC's been really, really bad about it lately, it seems to me. I mean, Chris Matthews, as well as Keith Olbermann, are just both driving me bananas with this, you know.
Yeah, but, well, I do keep hearing that, and I find it fascinating, because, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not there, I'm just saying that I don't know, because I can't see it, because I don't have the access to the media. But I find it fascinating, and... On one of the blogs I read regularly, and I've commented on this on my own podcast in the past, is Joe My God. And the comments there got so bad that I just had to stop reading it, because it was this constant sniping war back and forth between, well, supposed supporters of Hillary and supposed supporters of Barack. And the reason I say supposed is because let's just say that there's a political advantage for Republicans encouraging arguments among Democrats. You know, if mm-hmm. they can weaken the Democratic Party, it's to their advantage. And so I'm suspicious of a lot of these people.
Well, and you've got all these people who are saying, well, if my candidate, if Barack doesn't win or Hillary doesn't win, I'm voting for McCain, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like, well, let's see when you know, there's a lot of time between now and then.
Yeah.
You know, and let's see what it actually comes down to in November when you actually walk into the ballot, you know, yeah. place your ballot. So.
Absolutely. But one of the things that John McCain hasn't been getting much attention at all since his nomination was wrapped up, as you'd expect. And a lot of the attention he's gotten, most of the attention he's gotten, has been really positive. He's gotten some negative things. But the thing that I think that people need to start paying attention to is who he's looking at for vice president. Because mm-hmm, when Bush ran in 2000 and picked Cheney, I mean, I knew that Cheney was a grumpy ex-congressman and an official going back to the Nixon administration, but I didn't know much about him beyond that. Didn't really think to research his background. I know that if his background had been thoroughly investigated, there would have been no surprises about what the Bush administration ultimately did, because Cheney is all about the dictatorial powers of the presidency. So I think that we really need to focus on who McCain is picking as his vice president, because I actually am not convinced that McCain will live out a term should he be elected.
And well, you know, nobody can know that, really. No. I mean, it's a roll of the dice. So
exactly. And I don't know. It's just it concerns me, considering how bad Cheney is, and nobody paid any attention to him until it was too late.
Well, we had Dan Quayle.
Well, yeah. Oh God, I'll never forget when he was picked, and Bush the First went to meet up with Dan Quayle. This is after the convention was over, and Dan Quayle did this like little dance in front of George Bush the First. It was the most embarrassing thing I'd ever seen in national politics.
Well, pretty much everything he did was the most embarrassing.
Well, that's true, too.
Oh, and whatever happened to him, you don't hear much about him anymore. No. So,
well, he wasn't the brightest bulb on the Christmas tree, let's face it.
No, not exactly. And I think one of my favorite quotes of him was when he went to Hawaii, and as he got off the plane, he said something like, "Hawaii has always been a very pivotal part of the American history. It's an island that's surrounded by water."
All right, then.
And it's in the middle of the ocean. I was kind of like, okay. But, you know, the thing that's really worried me is that we would get that because McCain is not really liked by the right wing, is that they would pull in somebody who they would think could swing the right wing in their favor rather than just not going out and voting. And, you know, the biggest scare I had was Huckabee, you know, because especially if you get somebody of McCain's age, and if something happens to him, and then you got some right-wing nut job, you know, in there who's going to come in and take over, it's like that is the last thing this country needs at this point. So
yeah. Well, I suspect it wouldn't be Huckabee, because I think he's too crazy for mainstream America to accept. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he doesn't believe in evolution, and he believes in some weird pseudo-philosophies off on the fringes of, even among evangelical Christians, he's off on the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty of other people out there who we don't know anything about who might be similarly conservative.
And well, that's
my concern.
That is true. So, you know, and it is a big concern. And so I think it's really going to come down to, you know, we're not going to know who the running mate's going to be probably till about the convention. So,
yeah.
And we may not even know until the convention who's going to be the nominee on the Democratic side, let alone the running mate. So, you know, I've heard talk that, you know, if Clinton gets it, it could be Evan Bayh. You know, but then I heard talk that he was actually going to be a candidate himself. So I, you know, who knows?
Hmm.
You know, I think it's just there's too much up in the air. And, you know, the thing that really gets me about this whole thing, what I was saying earlier about, you know, the whole media and they're like, you know, beating up on Clinton and I'm not hearing anything negative being said about Obama is it seems like they're trying to, you know, they're trying to elect their candidate for us. You know what I mean? Hmm. And, you know, I'm not surprised by that. I shouldn't act like I am surprised by that because, of course, I'm not that jaded. Or I guess I am jaded because I live in Washington and I've lived here for 20 years. But the thing that irritates me is there is, it seems like all sense of fair and balanced is has really truly gone out the window. It, you know, it's gotten worse and worse, but it seems like now there is no such thing as fair and balanced anymore reporting, no matter who it is. And I just really irritates me. It really irritates me that the media or whoever owns the media is trying to decide who make the decision for the American people who's going to be in the White House. And that just kind of really irritates me. So
yeah, well, they've gotten into this habit now of starting to tell people what to think rather than
exactly. And if you get and if you put all your commentators online, you know, on every night on television on your on these 24-hour news channels, and all they do is beat up against one candidate and the other candidate walks on water, well, what do you think is going to happen in public opinion? You know, yeah. Because, you know, people, a lot of people, they just they want to be told what to do. They don't want to have to think for themselves.
Well, apparently not. So, if they voted for Bush twice.
Well, there you go. What was it? What was it? The day after the last election, I think it was in London or somewhere. They had a thing. It was like, how can 850 something million people be so stupid? Or I forget what it was. Something like that. You know. So, you know. It was funny.
There were times when. People would say to me, oh, where are you from? Because here in New Zealand I'm talking, and they couldn't quite make out the accent. They thought I was American, but maybe Canadian. They weren't quite sure. And I'd say, oh, I'm from America originally. They're like, oh.
And so, oh.
it's okay. I never voted for George Bush. Oh, okay.
Okay. Or you could have just said, I'm from Canada. Yeah. Yes.
There have been times I've let people think that.
Oh, gosh. But now one thing I did want to go back and talk about this is it seems like, you know, it seems to me, and, you know, I don't want to get caught up in any kind of drama here, but, you know, it seems to me that, you know, there's a whole thing going on here between racism and sexism, because I've noticed that, like, the attack seems to be coming from, at least from what I'm seeing on television, you know, is if somebody attacks Clinton, then, like, all of a sudden it's a race issue. Oh, you shouldn't have said that because that's just racism and blah, 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 blah.
You mean?
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not hearing anyone say anything about sexism if anyone attacks, you know, Hillary Clinton. So, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of, what's your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
Well, I think it's hard to tell when something is legitimately racist and legitimately sexist. I mean, sometimes it's bloody obvious, but there are other times when I think it's less clear. For example, there was a cartoon, editorial cartoon, it's actually posted on Joe My God again, where Hillary Clinton is depicted as a mosquito on the back of Barack Obama sucking blood out. And the commentators were saying, oh, this is sexist, making her appear as this person who has to be carried by a man. And I'm thinking, oh, come on. Now, in that particular case, I don't think that cartoon was either racist or sexist. And I pointed out in my comment that there are a limited number of if what you're trying to portray is that Clinton is taking the lifeblood, if you will, out of the candidacy of Barack Obama, there's a limited number of ways you can depict that in a cartoon. Mosquito is one, a vampire is another. It's not inherently sexist to use that imagery, or even to, and if it's a mosquito, chances are it's going to be somewhere on Barack's body, cartoon. And where you position it then becomes an issue because, you know, in the wrong place it could appear sexual rather than political. But nevertheless, I felt that people were reading into that commercial. I keep calling it commercial, that cartoon.
excuse me.
And I think that some people are just really too quick to look for offense where there isn't any.
Well, I think a lot of times what it is, and this is really my thought about it, is that it's easier to turn it into that than to actually face it and argue it intellectually.
Yeah.
It's easier to say it's racism or it's sexism than it is to actually sit and go through it and debate about the real issues, that's my thought. So
yeah, well, I think you're exactly right. And one of the problems historically for those who are liberal or on the left has been they have when they don't agree with something, they'll raise one of the isms: sexism, racism, heterosexism. I'm trying to think of things that end in ism, and it shuts down the debate. And it's what the right center, but particularly the right wing, means when they talk about political correctness run amok. They're not always talking about some sort of goofy policy. They're often talking about the tendency of people in the center and more towards the left end to raise these things and shut down debate. Now, mind you, the right does it as well. If they don't like something, they'll say it's Christian bashing, for instance, and shut down the debate. So you can't talk legitimately about, say, abortion rights or marriage equality or something like that. So it's not. I'm not picking on the left in this because the right does it as well. But I think you're right that it tends to often be a way that people will try to shut down debate on an issue rather than talk about it in detail. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, I sent you an article in when we were kind of emailing back and forth about, well, what do you want to talk about? Is there was an article from London about terrorism. Mm. And, oh, my gosh. And there's a, you know, there's a chance that terrorism is on the rise. And to me, that just strikes of more plugging right into this whole boogeyman scare tactic. What's your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. And there have been similar articles that have been in the American media. Some general was saying that there were likely to be terrorist attacks around the time of the election because they had tried that in Madrid and found that it worked. And there were a few others. And as soon as I saw that, mind you, this is the American ones I'm talking about here, I was thinking to myself, here we go. Because just before the 2004 election, the Bush administration was pushing all this talk of terrorism and terrorist attacks to try to scare people into voting for the Republicans again. And it worked. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, they're going to try to do that now for McCain to start laying the groundwork for scaring people about terrorism. It strikes me as being a bit of a nonsense because in this day and age, there's always a threat of terrorism. It doesn't go away just because there isn't an election, for instance.
Well, you know, we've had terrorists for years. You know, I mean, remember back in the 70s, the planes that got, you know, that's where the air marshals came from, you know?
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, so...
And the weather and underground the was blowing up things back in the original anti-war movement era, and the Klan was blowing up things, or burning down things, I suppose, more in the South during the civil rights era. So I mean,
well, I'm sure that in the 1700s, the British thought we were terrorists. So when we were trying to become independent, so
well, that is a matter of perspective. I guess.
Yes, I guess.
Yeah, but that whole thing does kind of worry me a bit because I would hope that people wouldn't get fooled so easily again by that kind of talk, but I'm not sure that it won't work.
Yeah, and well, it comes down to it, you know. It's just like they were making the big thing about, you know, Clinton said the other day, what was it, that she made a statement and she was tired and this, and so they immediately went and said, well, you put out the ad that said, you know, who would you rather have at 3 o'clock in the morning, and obviously you can't function it, you know, late at night, and you know, it's like... You know, okay, look, this is getting to the point of ridiculous. So.
Yeah, and I actually find that going on with both, directed at both candidates, and I am sick of that whole nonsense. I mean, they beat up about Hillary saying that she landed in Bosnia under sniper fire when she didn't. Well, so maybe she was a bit wrong about that. That doesn't necessarily mean she's a liar.
Yeah,
and exactly. Going after Barack because he said that... small town America was bitter, and it was, what did he say, that they were turning to their guns and their religion and stuff, and so then John McCain says he's
and they want their jobs back that were gone 25 years ago or something like that are never going to come back, you know, or whatever.
And what he said is not what it's being depicted as. What Hillary says is usually not what's being depicted as in the media or by the opponents, and it's becoming a bit, it's surreal, I think. Because if you only listen to how things are portrayed in the media or by the opponents, you would think that somebody said the exact opposite of what they really said. It's just
becoming, absolutely.
It's becoming absurd. Absolutely. That whole business over Jeremiah Wright, the people who were frothing so much about him had never heard any of his actual sermons. They'd only seen little snippets that were on the news or on YouTube, or they read about it on right-wing blogs. And so they were just going apoplectic about what he supposedly said, forgetting that context matters very much. And they're willing to forgive their preferred candidate, which in those cases was either John McCain or Hillary Clinton. But they weren't willing to forgive somebody who supports Barack Obama, not even what he said personally.
Right. Right, and in so many times, the sound bites just take things out of context. I'm not saying always, but there are times when... You know, the soundbite, it sounds that way because it makes a lot of hype and upsets people, but that wasn't the real intent, maybe, of what they were actually saying. You could probably take a soundbite of this show and, like, go off and say that, you know, we're evil, mean, horrible people, you know?
But we are.
No, I'm the nicest podcaster.
That's right. Everybody says so.
Go read my iTunes reviews. They all say I'm very nice. I was laughing about that. Oh, Tim is so nice. Tim is so nice. Tim is just such a nice guy.
You mentioned the evil iTunes.
Yeah. Well, it's been great being on here, Arthur.
Yeah, well, thank you and very much for joining me and having me on yours.
It is getting close to bedtime here in D.C.
Yes, and I have to go out grocery shopping because it's much earlier here.
Well, it's tomorrow there.
It is. And I can't recommend the day to you, sorry.
Well, you know, it's my tomorrow for you and your yesterday for me. So I'm in the past and you're in the future.
Well, temporarily anyway. Sometimes I feel like I'm living in the past, but that's a whole other matter.
it's a whole temporal incursion thing, Sam. I learned that from Star Trek.
It's a microfracture of the space-time continuum.
Yes, exactly. We are messing around with the space-time continuum. So
yes, chronotron particles are everywhere.
Let me get my tricorder out and see if I can.
Okay, I think just about everyone's left now, except maybe Walt will still be listening.
I think Walt is. Walt already got his tricorder out, so he's scanning his iTunes for you know quantum matter. He knows it.
And a certain unnamed podcaster has already gone. Oh Lord.
Oh. Or y'all had nothing to talk about.
Well, I'm going to beam out of here.
All righty. We'll see you, Arthur.
Sounds good.
Adios, muchachos.
I'd like to thank Tim from Go Rainbow Radio, and there are some who call me Tim, for taking the time to talk with me. And, of course, part one of that conversation is over on Tim's site. There are some who call me Tim, timcromwell.com. And there's a link on my blog at all times. And, of course, I'll put one in the show notes. So thanks for that, Tim. That was fun. And now I'm going to switch gears and go over to the comments. And first up, I have a phone message.
It is Peter from Atlanta, Georgia. I just wanted to call, first of all, and wish you a happy belated birthday. I'm sorry I did not manage to realize your birthday was going to be sooner, or I would have called you earlier. Otherwise, I wanted to also congratulate you on the loss of weight. I know the wonderful feeling of finding new jeans in the back of the closet and being able to fit into them again. And more importantly, I know how to throw out all the other stuff because it just tends to take up space and piss you off. Otherwise, I hope you had a wonderful birthday, and it sounds like you did, and I hope to talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for that, Peter. Or should I say, on behalf of Tim, thanks for that. Because that was, of course, a message for Tim. We just figured as long as we were splitting up the conversation between two podcasts, we might as well play his phone message on my podcast. Well, it's not like I have any phone messages of my own to play anyway, you know. So, but now I am going to switch over to comments on my podcast. First up, let me go over here. This is for episode 82, Jake Day, and it's from Auntie Vera Charles, who says, "Once again, I find myself thanking someone for such kind words spoken about me in their podcast. You've warmed the cockles of my heart, my lovey, and I've got some mighty cold cockles. Thank you for that, and as always, thanks for listening. Kisses, Vera." And I said, "My pleasure, Auntie Vera, and thanks for listening to me." It is kind of like being listened to by a celebrity. And I'm saying that deliberately, because if you do listen to Vera Speaks for Real, you will know that Auntie Vera spoke just recently about the whole nonsense about podcasters being celebrities and all that kind of thing. I really enjoy that podcast. And as I was saying when I was talking with Tim, it feels sometimes as if Vera's saying things that I would say. It's kind of freaky sometimes, to be honest, but I really enjoy the podcast. And if you haven't given it a listen, please do so. There is a link on my blog down under Parade of Podcasts. But now over on episode 83, and first up was Archer, who said, "It's nice to have a normal day from time to time. That's such an odd story about the butter. I can't imagine having a weird tax on butter. And that story about the margarine when you were younger was weird too. I hadn't heard that before. Oh, and I haven't heard margarine said like that before, margarine." And I said, "I loves me some normal days. There won't be a tax on butter, but saying margarine that way taxes me. It's just a symptom of how I've had to adapt to Kiwi English. And it's actually fairly unconscious for me now. Kiwis do say margarine, but I grew up, of course, saying margarine. And that's my natural way of saying it. But it's one of those things where I had to change the way I said things in order to be understood. I mean, some of them are no big deal, like saying tomato instead of tomato. And having to soften the R in my own name to say Arthur instead of Arthur, as I probably would have back home. But Margarine is probably one of the odder ones I've had to adapt to. And I'm trying to think of some others that say niche instead of niche, like so many Americans do. Although I actually prefer niche, just between you and me. And words like that. So it's just a symptom of words that I've had to change in order just to be understood. And next up was Roger Green, who said, I thought oleo and margarine were the same. In fact, as I recalled, it used to be called oleomargarine, saying the American way. I see that there are some nuanced differences. And then he provides a link. And then he goes on, more on this topic than you probably want. Definition. And then there's a link for that. Court case. The manufacture of artificially colored oleomargarine may be prohibited by a free government without a violation of fundamental rights. A link to that. And I said, thanks for the links. It's probably more accurate to say that it's more than I should know. My head is stuffed too full of useless information as it is. Plenty of people will agree with that, I'm sure. None the least of them being Nigel, who says that I have trouble remembering things because I've got too much useless information crammed in there. But I figure it's not necessarily useless because I don't know that I don't need the information. So there you go. And finally was Calvin, who said, I wonder if there would be a tax in Crisco. The China thing seems weird as well. And to think I was just yesterday watching people running through the streets with streets with and blocking traffic yelling anti-China slogans. Sigh. And I said, we don't have Crisco here, though there are similar things. The only time we see anti-China tirades is when MPs from one of the parties in Parliament start speaking. We don't have Crisco. The most common brand here would be called Cremelta, which I'm pretty sure is in Australia as well. Probably is Australian. Anyway, I don't personally know anybody who uses it, but I see it on the store shelf from time to time. Just one little thing just stuck up in the shelf by the oils and lard. You can get lard here. Well, that's not on the shelf. That's in the refrigerated section. And the anti-China, that my comment was a bit snarky, I suppose. But there's one party here in New Zealand called New Zealand First, which is run by a Maori fellow, basically. And it's always appealed primarily to the older community, shall we say. And a lot of their support comes from, well, let's be real here. A lot of their support comes from retired English immigrants, people who are the World War II generation or just not much younger than that. And they have particular ideas about New Zealand and about people who are not from here, specifically Asians. And so every once in a while, the party or the people in it will make some stupid anti-Asian remark and do some things that you would have to construe as being anti-Asian. I have absolutely no time or patience for that party or its leader, whose name is Winston Peters. Unfortunately, Winston Peters is also the current foreign minister because of a coalition agreement between the New Zealand Labour Party, which is the party of government, and the minor parties. So I'm not a big fan of Winston Peters. I'm not a big fan of New Zealand First. And I quite frankly wouldn't be sorry to see them booted out of Parliament altogether in the next election. But of course, I'll have to talk about that more another time. Today, being April 15th, is of course Tax Day in America. And I just thought I would remind you in passing about the fact that we expat Americans are required to file an annual return to the IRS every year, declaring all of our income. Now, because New Zealand and the United States have a tax treaty, we pay taxes to only one country. However, we're only allowed to exclude up to, it's currently about $87,000 in income. Anything above that, we would have to pay U.S. tax on as well. And there's only two ways you can get out of that as an American living overseas. One is to renounce your U.S. citizenship, and the other is to die. And neither of those options is very attractive to me, I have to say, so I put up with this every year. But unlike you people living in America, I can't file electronically because I live overseas. So I have to download the forms, fill them out, and mail them off. Now, I get an automatic 2-month extension, so it's not as critical for me as it is for Americans. And quite frankly, I probably could get to it sooner. It's such a bother and such a hassle. But I download the forms as PDFs, and I fill them in on the computer, and then I just print them out, sign them, and send them away. It's the next best thing to actually having the ability to file electronically, but it really is in stark contrast with the way it is here in New Zealand, because we can fill out all of our tax forms online with directly with the tax body, which is called Inland Revenue. There's no having to go to a third company and use their software or their website or whatever. You go directly to the tax people, fill out the form, and you're done. I much prefer the way we do it here, I have to say. But that is it for this Tuesday, April 15th episode. Now, I have had a little trouble sticking to my twice weekly schedule lately, as you've no doubt noticed, but I'm going to try my darndest to be back on Friday with more, as I always said before I listened to Andy Vera, with more fun and frivolity. But if I don't, please forgive me. The plan is for me to go back to my twice weekly schedule. We'll see how I go, eh? But that is it for this week, and after the outro, I'm going to have an outtake, which I don't usually do. I got the idea from We're Mean Because You're Stupid. And finally, I'd just like to say welcome to listeners from Tim's podcast who've come over to listen to part 2 of our conversation. Welcome. Have a look around. Just make sure you put the furniture back when you're done. But that's it for today, and I'll be back again, hopefully, on Friday. Bye. Welcome to part 2 of the conversation with Tim Carmel. My name's Arthur. You would know that already. Let me start over again. they would know that because it's my bloody podcast. Okay.
Duh.
Live long and prosper.